Senate will please come to order. Would the chief clerk please call the roll?
Roll call for Thursday, February 21st. Anderson?
Here.
Allman?
Here.
Bebout?
Here.
Burns?
Here.
Case?
Here.
Coe?
Here.
Cooper?
Here.
DeCaria?
Here.
Fecht?
Here.
Geis?
Excused.
Excused. Hastert?
Here.
Hines?
Here.
Jennings?
Here.
Job?
Here.
Johnson?
Here.
Landon?
Here.
Larson? Massey,
here.
Meyer,
here.
Mockler,
here.
Nicholas,
here.
Perkins,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Ross,
here.
Scott,
here.
Sessions,
here.
Townsend,
here.
Basie,
here.
Von Flatern,
here.
President Schiffer,
here.
Geis is here. 30 present.
A prayer by Senator Jennings.
Stand before you today, and we're here to do the people of the news. Be with us and be in our hearts. Lead us down the path of the best servant and stay in our nation. And be with the leaders that we have had throughout our state of the nation in the past few years instead. Let me ask you to listen to Jesus and
would you please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands.
One nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Fellow senators, our doctor for the day is Dr. Amy Trelease Bell, and I don't see her anywhere in the chamber. She's from Cheyenne. We do not have a nurse today. Our thought for the day, when you have eliminated the impossible, whatever remains, however improbable, must be the truth. Reading, correction, and approval of the journal. Would the reading clerk please read the journal committee report?
Mr. President, your journal committee reports that the journal of February the 20th, 2008, has been read and recommends that it be approved. Senator Perkins, Chairman.
Are there any objections? Hearing none, the report is adopted. Reports from standing committees.
February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 87, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 20th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 64, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Fecht, Larson, and Vasey, Senator Larson, Chairman. February the 20th, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, to whom was referred House Bill 66, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Bebout, Cooper, Fecht, Larson, and Vasey, Senator Larson, Chairman.
Senator Jennings.
Mr. President, may I have privilege of the floor? The
floor is yours, sir.
Mr. President, I would like to have the Senate join me in a round of applause for our newest member's birthday, which is today, Senator Bill Landon.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business of the consideration of bills on general file.
Before I make the motion, Mr. President, just a couple of notes. I believe, from what I'm understanding, that there will be a new composite picture this year with the new members included in it, and so if anybody would like a copy of that when it's completed, they need to go up to the photographer today and order it. Also, as you can see, we have a long list of the committee whole bills on committee of the whole, and of course, everyone wants a bill up there, and you have to realize that if we don't discuss them too much today, you still have a second and third opportunity to discuss these bills. So if we can hold down our conversation a little bit, well, they'll hopefully move a little faster. So, Mr. President, I move that the Senate resolve itself into the Committee of the Whole.
The motion is for the Senate to resolve itself into Committee of the Whole. All in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Senator Perkins.
Okay, thanks. Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our consideration today is Senate File 65. First, reading clerk will please read the Senate file.
Senate File 65, Post-Conviction Relief Petition DNA Evidence, sponsored by the Judiciary Committee, an act relating to criminal procedure. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What's your pleasure? Senator Ross.
Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Oh, yeah. Got to do that, don't we?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise a report, it do so with a due pass recommendation for Senate File 65. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Senate File 65, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 9.
Mr. Chairman, I move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I will discuss that with you at this point in time. Ladies and gentlemen, on introduction, I indicated to you that there was a potential problem with this bill, and it dealt with the Section 7-7-106, third-party DNA sampling. We are awaiting an Attorney General's opinion on whether or not that was constitutional, and we did receive that opinion from the Attorney General's office, and it indicated that there are serious constitutional problems with that particular section. And so what the Standing Committee amendment does is it goes in and it takes out all of the third-party DNA sampling portion of the bill. It is not necessary to the main body of the bill, which is 712-302 at SEC, which is the DNA sampling with regards to the offender. So with that, I would ask for your favorable consideration of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Do you have any question? Question having been called, we'll be ready for the question. All's in favor of Senator Ross's motion that we adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed? Motion passes. Motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, number 1, to Senate File 65 is approved, has passed. There's no other amendments. Okay, let's go to the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So, folks, if you would turn to page 4, that's actually the start of the bill now. and this will be known as the Post-Conviction DNA Testing Act. This bill comes to you as a result of interim work by your Judiciary Committee. It had input from the University of Wyoming's Law School, the Rocky Mountain Innocence Project, which Ms. Monroe from Utah was involved in, and of course, the Sheridan County Attorney, Matt Riedel, who is president and has a great wealth of knowledge, also participated in the drafting of this bill. It's a compilation of other statutes from other states, but primarily from the state of Utah. And essentially what this bill does is, as science has moved along, we are now able to do testing that we were never able to do in the past. And what this bill will allow us to do, it's kind of a CSI kind of thing, in a way. You see it on TV where the use of DNA can, with new technology, present a situation where you could have exculpatory evidence that exculpates the offender from the charge itself. And we have nothing on our books to allow for that. In Utah, since they've passed their bill in 2002, they've had all of about six motions in reference to this type of statute. Only one of them has moved forward and resulted in a determination of innocence. In Wyoming, I would suspect that you would see even less of these kinds of cases. But in any event, what this bill does is it sets up definitions in 303 and then indicates that an offender or a person who's convicted can file a motion with the court, if it deems appropriate, for a motion for DNA testing, if there's evidence. Files the motion on page 5, the motion for DNA testing, and then sets out what that motion must contain under oath and includes good faith. And the contents of that motion are set out in pages 5, 6, and 7. You will see on the bottom of page 7 that the court may not order DNA testing in cases which occurred after January 1 of 2000. The reason being, and I cannot tell you what the new technology or the test name was, but the testimony in front of the committee was that's a time when the newest testing became available. Prior to that date, they were using older methods and not as refined as it is now. So a person who enters a plea or nolo contendere, which means no contest, or after July or January 1, 2000, basically has the court will not order that if they've hadn't requested it, or they made a strategic reason or decision in their trial to not seek that. But for those that their case has been pending or they're incarcerated or in prison now before January 1 of 2000, they don't have to show the same kind of diligence or lack of due diligence that would need to be shown for those after January 1, 2000. So then what happens is a motion is filed for DNA testing. It's got to be served on the district attorney or the attorney general. They have an answer period back within 60 days, and the court would hold a hearing. During that hearing, then the court would decide whether or not there's sufficient prima facie evidence to order the testing be done. Once the testing is done, then depending on what the results of that testing would be, the next step would be if it was showed that, it was inconclusive or that this person was the offender, that's the end of the deal. But if it showed that he wasn't, then that person has the opportunity to file a motion for new trial, and or there could be an agreement with the prosecuting attorney. And I will cite to a recent example in Colorado where Mr. Masters, after 19 years of imprisonment, was recently determined not to be the offender, and ultimately what happened, instead of a new trial, the motion for new trial being granted, the party, the prosecutor, and the defendant agreed to dismiss further charges. The court entered an order basically expunging his record and determining him not to be an order of innocence. Now, we do provide protections in here because DNA evidence is not always the most important piece of evidence. And there could be other kinds of evidence that, even though the DNA evidence is maybe inconclusive or may not even be this person, there could be sufficient other evidence for this case to still go forward, and this bill still allows for those situations. And allows for, if there was a plea bargain or some sort of an arrangement in which the parties agreed to dismiss certain charges in relationship to a plea for this charge, that if now it comes back and they find that this individual is not the offender, they could still revive the old other charges that person may very well have been guilty of. It may have been, let's say, a burglary or something like that, with something else that occurred during that. They could still come back and establish or file the burglary charges on them. This bill is broader than just capital cases, but it does, on page 11, take into consideration capital cases. And generally in a capital case, you have the liability or the determination of guilt phase, and you also have the sentencing phase. And in the sentencing phase, you can also have what the jury has to determine whether or not there's sufficient mitigating circumstances so as to not grant the death penalty. And you'll see that on page 11 in terms of what that evidence could be used for. We provide for that the testing would be done by the state crime lab, unless there's sufficient showing that perhaps they don't have the capability, but we do, to do the testing, or there needs to be third party or whatever. The court would have to decide which testing entity to use this. We provide, of course, for right for counsel and the costs. One of the questions that came up on introduction, or that it was raised after introduction, was, what about the cost? Well, the cost would be borne by the movant, generally the defendant. However, if that person is serving a sentence is in prison or can establish a need, then the cost of that would be paid by the state. I think I have covered what would happen. Of course, victim needs to be notified. If you file a motion for DNA testing and it doesn't comport with the requirements of 302 and the court determines that it's not going to grant the DNA testing, that is not an appealable order. However, you could seek a writ of review. But that would be different. That would be through the Supreme Court, but it would just be a review of that procedure. It isn't an appeal. However, if the court grants a motion for a new trial, a party may appeal that motion. So the state could appeal that if they so decided. There's also provision in here for consensual testing. If in essence the parties all agree, we ought to see if this evidence is of such that it, so we allow that. And then in terms of the last couple of pages, 19 and 20, we talk about the the storage of DNA evidence, what needs to be done. Basically, from July 1, 2008 forward, the biological material or evidence shall be preserved for at least 5 years, so long as the person's incarcerated or in custody, whichever is longer. If it get to that point where they pass the 5 years and they want to destroy whatever evidence, they have to provide notice to their attorney of record, if there is one, if not, to the state public defender's office, and then they have 180 days in which to contest whether or not the destruction of that evidence should take place. And that also helps then law enforcement in terms of trying to keep track of all this evidence and so forth. If there is somebody or the chain of custody was willfully or maliciously destroyed or altered, in paragraph S on page 21, then that can be an offense, imprisoned by or with a fine and imprisonment of not more than 5 years. And that's the bill. I urge your favorable consideration.
Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just for clarification, I wasn't clear on what you said relative to if the DNA is there and it's used in a capital case, and can or cannot law enforcement use that DNA against other cases. I think I heard you say that if he had other cases, he may be cleared or so on. Could it be used to try to establish a conviction in other cases, assuming?
Senator Ross?
If, in fact, the evidence, the DNA evidence, showed that perhaps this individual was not the offender in that particular case, it certainly could be used in some other offense if they were able to establish that that DNA matched, let's say, a sexual assault or something in some other case. Certainly would be available. It doesn't preclude the use in any other case. The one part of the bill that we took out, which was determined that is probably not constitutional, was an issue of whether or not, in an effort to decide who is the perpetrator, can we go in and ask other third parties who are not considered a suspect to submit to DNA testing so as to narrow the field. And that was determined to be a violation of Article 4, or Amendment Number 4 of the United States Constitution.
Thank you. We'll go Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Two questions. You hear that there's this national DNA depository where we're going to start keeping DNA like fingerprints. Are we going to participate in that? And number two, in the 5 years or more that we store it, who stores it?
Senator Feck?
Mr. Chairman, I stand on and for the bill, but I do have to offer one minor correction to the additional comment to the initial comments. This is not like CSI. You can't take out your little handheld scanner and buzz it over the sample and immediately have an identification of the suspect. This is extremely expensive. It's very time-consuming. What the good senator is referring to on the national database, that's going to take a long time to get established and set up. We're going to see, and I want to prepare the appropriations chairman for the fact that we will see massive requests from DCI for funding so that the lab can keep up with this. A typical sample to process costs anywhere between $6,000 and $12,000 per sample.
Senator Ross?
Currently, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Currently, all of our evidence is stored here in Cheyenne. Those members of the Judiciary Committee that have had the opportunity to go to that place, we would have to kill you if I told you where it was at. True story, though. I mean, we have a real, mounting amounts of evidence, particularly in the area of drugs, methamphetamines, heroin, all kinds of stuff like that. I mean, it's incredible. And we've tried to ameliorate that problem by allowing last session sampling of that. But it'll either be kept in the jurisdiction in which the offense was occurred, in their storage facilities, and or through DCI and their location here in Cheyenne.
Further discussion? Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that when the committee the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 65, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. All the committee of, excuse me, Senate File 65 has passed committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 13. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 13, Mental Health Professions Practice Act Amendment, sponsored by the Mental Health Committee, an act relating to the Mental Health Professions Practice Act. It was assigned to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Ullman, Feck, Hassert, Landon, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move the committee the whole right before you do so with the recommendation that Senate File 13 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Please read the amendment.
Senate File 13, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 3, line 12.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment goes in on page 3, line 12. It just changes the language slightly so that some very literal-minded attorney could not construe that if you met two of the requirements, that wasn't good enough. So we just say any instead of one. Stand ready for any questions. Ask adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Any questions? All those in favor, let's see, you've heard the question. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion has passed. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Ullman for an explanation of this good little Senate file.
Thank you, Senator Ullman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is basically a cleanup bill on some of our legislation that we've done. The licensing board... it gives out licensing for our therapists and that in our state, said that the way our statutes are written, it was like a catch-22 for them. So in the first part on this bill on page 2, referring to B and C, and also on page 5 on N, those three all are working with the same thing. What they did is on catch 22, our statutes state that a person cannot get a job without a license, and yet they can't get a license without a job. And so we're trying to change that. So it gives a little more, helps the facilities, our mental health facilities in the state, be able to hire somebody, and then the board will let them work under the supervision of that clinical supervisor until they can get the license to them. So that's what the changing on that is. And then the other part of the bill, it's a little bit of a change in the reciprocity, or bringing people into the state. I'm having a hard time with that word today. And giving them means so that they can, if they come into the state and they haven't quite got all the requirements that the state requires, all they need is a couple of classes and that, they can come in and work at a facility. Again, with the board will know about this, know where these people are, and they also have to make sure that they are working under a clinical supervisor until they make up on those classes so that then they will be licensed after they meet our requirements, state requirements. And then it goes on to other means where if somebody comes into the state, let's say from Colorado, and Colorado has the exact, pretty much the exact standards that Wyoming requires, that we will then take them in and give them a license. So basically, this is what this bill is about. It's just giving us so we can get our workforce up to date and bring them in a little bit easier for our mental health facilities. And I hope that we'll have favorable vote on this, and I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Allman. Questions? Appearing to be none. Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion with the Committee of the Whole Rises report that do so for the favorable recommendation on Senate File 13. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed say no. Senate File 13 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill we have is Senate File 24. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 24, Health Insurance Clinical Trial, sponsored by the Labor Committee, and Act Relating to Insurance. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Allman, Feck, Hastert, Landon, and Scott, Senator Scott, Chairman.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so with the recommendation that Senate File 24 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment, and I ask it be read in at this time.
The reading clerk, please read the amendment.
Senate File 24, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 6, after line 2.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the standing committee amendment. Mr. Chairman, the Standing Committee Amendment does two things. First, it says that if there's a cause of action against an insurance company for complying with this section, says there isn't a cause of action against an insurance company for complying with this section. Apparently, Mr. Chairman, what's happened in some other jurisdictions is that attorneys, when something goes wrong in one of these clinical trials, and they do sometimes, their trials, they're treating desperately ill people that have cancer. People die during the course of these trials, partly because the drugs are effective only for a percentage of the case, and you're dealing with people who have a terminal cancer. Apparently, the federal law keeps them from suing the people running the trials. And so some of them have turned around looking for a deep pocket and sued the insurance company saying they never should have funded it. And where the insurance companies are being mandated to fund it, they don't think that's fair. I think they're right. I would think that somebody making such a claim would have a difficult time doing it, but this just makes it clear. The second provision is a change in the definition that you see on page 6. Trying to make that a bit clearer. The committee was suggested, the committee and the committee adopted it. Those are the changes. I'd be happy to answer any questions. Urge adoption.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I guess I'm just wondering why we need this standing committee amendment. I just find it hard to believe that there is such a lawsuit out there. And I think that this is just a solution looking for a problem. And I think it just muddies up the water. You can only sue somebody for their negligence. The fact that they have no direct cause of action against their insurance company on that. And I just think that this is wrong.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, if the good senator is correct, then this is superfluous, but never underestimate the creativity of the Bar Association, and even if ultimately they might not prevail, I can see a suit being brought and damages being collected on a settlement just to make the suit go away, because that's cheaper than fighting it. This would give a clear direction to get the thing dismissed.
Thank you, Senator Scott. Further discussion? Seeing none, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
I believe that the motion has passed. The motion to adopt Senator Division being called for, all those who had voted aye, please rise. Thank you. All those opposed, please rise. Thank you. The motion to adopt the Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 13 has passed. We're now back on the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I yield to Senator Hastert for a further explanation of the Senate file.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Members of the Senate, I bring it Senate File 24, Health Insurance Clinical Trials, and basics of this bill. And just the reason we're bringing the bill is that cancer patients who have no option left to but turn to a clinical trial, and 3% of adults over 50% of the children with cancer are enrolled in some kind of clinical trials. And clinical trials are the only way medications, treatments, and new devices can be approved. And the clinical trial this bill addresses are one sponsored by the FDA, the CDC, National Institutes of Health, and Department of Defense, and are always backed by solid science and are very closely supervised, Mr. Chairman. Senate File 24 is about it requires health insurance companies to pay for standard of care costs for patients enrolled in phases 2 through 4 of clinical trials. And we have deliberately eliminated, this bill was here last year, and in committee there was some discussion about the insurance companies and other organizations, and they got together through the interim and through the work of the interim committee came up with some compromises, and one of which was to eliminate the phase one type of clinical trials. Phase one is typically where they're trying to get, it's very small groups, and they're just usually trying to get things like the dosage amount straightened out. So it felt it was a good compromise to not include phase ones. Now, in the bill, on page 2, it just speaks to the fact that if you're covered, if you have the health care policy, and you have provisions in there for routine care, that you cannot be denied your routine care costs just because you participate in a clinical trial. And then on down to the page, it goes into the fact that it's phases 2, 3, and 4 that are covered, and that this study has to be approved by the organizations outlined, which is the FDA and the CDC and Department of Veterans Affairs, on through page 3, where it goes into the medical treatment has to be by a licensed healthcare provider and a licensed facility in order to be, in which these are, that's standard language, these are standard types of procedures you find in clinical trials today anyway. And that to participate in a clinical trial, you have to ensure that you have the informed consent forms taken care of. And then we get into page 4, be sure that you understand the risks, and then the coverage for medical treatment stipulates that it must be the routine patient care, and then Section C goes into the exclusions for what we're, you know, what is to be, the portion on little I, the portion of the clinical trial that is customarily paid for by the government, and these are the exclusions, on through page 5 of the bill, including at the top, you know, what is excluded, what isn't covered, you know, the different items, the extra strenuous expenses, the travel and the housing, you know, things that, and they're just spelling out what you wouldn't expect to find, because these aren't routine in under routine care in your insurance policy. And then nothing in the section on the next piece excluded if it wasn't conducted in a licensed lab by a licensed physician. Continue on with some exclusions preclude the insurer on the rights of subrogation on through page 6 of the definitions of what a clinical trial is and what routine patient care costs mean. And so that, Mr. Chairman, like I said, this is a product of an interim work, collaboration of groups with the insurance companies, the American Cancer Society, coming together to put together the outlines of what's covered in a clinical trial. And this is and basis on a lot of language that is already present in other states. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Hassert.
And Mr. Chairman, I guess, did we do have not one point of order, just so I understand. We have a Committee of the Whole amendment?
Yes, we do have a Committee of the Whole amendment. Who's going to address that? Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, I ask it be read in at this time.
Please read the amendment.
Senate File 24, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 5.
Thank you, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of the Committee of the Whole amendment. Mr. Chairman, this amendment was brought to me by the Legislative Service Office. They say it's a routine provision in bills of this kind. Insurance is a contract. We don't want to have any risks of a row over whether we're impairing the obligations of a contract, a constitutional issue. So what we do is what's stated in this. They apply once the contract has been renewed or continued, some kind of an action there, so that we don't impair any existing contract. Unfortunately, it might mean if you had, say, this month signed a six-month insurance policy that will get renewed in August, you'll have a month or two before you come under this particular mandate. I don't see a real good way to avoid this, and I urge adoption of the amendment.
Okay, thank you. Discussion on the amendment? Question being called for. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. Okay, Senator Scott's motion to adopt the Standing Committee, the Committee of the Whole Amendment for Senate File 24 has passed. We're back on the bill. We have a question? The question having been called for, all those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, they do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 24, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Senate File 24 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 28. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 28, Investment of State Funds Revisions, sponsored by the Capital Financing Committee, an act relating to public funds. It was referred to Committee Number 3, Revenue. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Case, Jennings, Mockler, and Ross, Senator Anderson, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Anderson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. When the Committee of the Whole rises to report, I hope that it would do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 28, and I would yield. There are no amendments on this bill, and I would yield to Senator Fecht for an explanation.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Senator Fecht.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Vice President, thank you very much. This proposal was originally brought to the Select Committee on Capital Financing and Investments by the State Treasurer. If you look at the bill, it is a rather long and extensive bill. It is 46 pages long. Overall, the bill attempts to consolidate and rearrange state investments, removing conflicting and redundant or unclear language, and replacing numerous cross-reference provisions. The first section I would like to refer you to is on page 2, lines 15 through 20. The definition of permanent funds in that section has been amended to remove, and if you remember those flow charts that we've been given several times throughout this session, we removed spending policy reserve accounts from the common school account and the permanent mineral trust fund as permanent funds. They are not permanent funds and should not be treated as such. So that removal has occurred. The Treasurer's Office has not been treating them as permanent funds, but we did, and this is clarifying language to make sure that that does not happen. Page 3, lines 8 through 13, authorized investments. Although this has been broadened, it has clarified general investment authority language. I would also refer you to Article 9-4, State Statute 9-4-701, which is the lead paragraph for all of these investments that currently exist. This language has not been changed. The State Treasurer may invest permanent funds with the approval of the State Land Board and Investment Board in the following. And then there's a whole list. But all of these investments are governed under the approval of the State Land and Investment Board. So anything that, and that's real important when I get to another section in just a few minutes. Page 4, line 12, there's another kind of overall policy statement here. The Treasurer has been guided by the Prudent Investor Act in any discretionary investment. There were some exceptions referred to under the original language. Those exceptions have been removed, so there is no exception to the prudent investor rule. Page 12, lines 4 through 12, legislatively designated investments, LDIs, that has always had a cap of $500 million, but in the past there was a long list of LDIs that were allowed. The long list has been removed, and instead general language has been placed in there to describe LDIs. The $500 million cap still remains. Page 21, line 19, this change appears several times throughout the legislation. Again, all investments must be authorized either directly by law or approved by the SLIB board, and they are all subject to the prudent investor rule. Farm loans, which are on page 27, line 2, the statutes did contain many cross-references between the investment statutes, which are in Title 9, and the farm loan statutes, which are in Title 11. All of those references have now taken it straight to Title 11. There's no reason to have them in both. And that is pretty much the intent of the language of the bill. I would stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Feck. Questions of Senator Feck? There being none? Oh, thank you. Senator Hines.
Mr. Chairman, one question, if the sponsor could answer briefly on the LDIs. What was the thought behind not listing those legislative designated investment anymore? And by not being listed, where will we go to find that list?
Thank you, Senator Hines. Senator Feck.
One moment, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Feck.
Chairman, the purpose was to allow the investment managers the freedom to look at the LDIs under a generic definition rather than the individual reference by each name. So there will be no individual list of LDIs. The $500 million cap has not been changed, so that is still there. But if you wanted to reference a specific LDI, I don't know that you could because that's been removed.
Thank you, Senator Feck. Further discussion? There appearing to be none, are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Anderson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 28, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
It appears that Senate File 28 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next, our next bill for consideration is Senate File 36. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 36, Public Health Emergencies, Volunteers, sponsored by the Labor Committee, and Act Relating to Public Health and Safety. It was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Allman, Feck, Hastert, Landon, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move in the Committee of the Whole rise and report it do so the recommendation that Senate File 36 do pass. There was a standing committee amendment. I ask it be read in at this time.
Please read the amendment.
Senate File 36, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 17.
Thank you. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, move adoption of the standing committee amendment and yield to Senator Hastert for an explanation of the bill and the standing committee amendment.
Thank you. Senator Hastert.
First, I guess the standing committee amendment, there was some discussion during introduction, and it just simply changes the word required to necessary on page 2, line 17. And a correction on, I believe, the citation, statute citation. And I'll stand for questions or call the question on the amendment.
Any questions? Okay, question having been called for. All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion to adopt the standing committee amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 36 has passed. We're back on the bill. Senator Hastert.
Thank you. Members of the Senate, Senate File 36 is a Joint Labor Health Social Services Interim Committee bill, and this bill is for a public health emergency such as influenza, pandemic, or the plague. A number of active health care providers will be strained, and we will not have sufficient numbers to cover the state given that type of situation. Senate File 36 addresses the shortage of health care workers in a governor-declared public health emergency, Mr. Chairman, by allowing for temporary licensure of volunteer health care providers who are retired, who have inactive licenses, or who are licensed in another state without a Wyoming certificate. The bill would also provide immunity from liability for these volunteers while they're responding only in the public health emergency, Mr. Chairman. And importantly, this bill allows a state licensing board to establish rules and regulations for the temporary licensure of volunteer providers. And this will allow for continued oversight of the process by the licensing board. And as a safety net, Mr. Chairman, this bill does provide a process for the state health officer to issue temporary licenses to volunteer providers pending action on the volunteer's application for temporary licensure by their prospective licensing board. So in the bill, Mr. Chairman, on page 1, at the bottom of the page, it's where 35414 is amended to read, and it discusses the immunity section through page 2, Mr. Chairman, and at section B talks about how an individual can be licensed, how the state officer would license an individual in a governor-declared emergency, and how they work in conjunction with the prospective licensing board. And then on page 3, Mr. Chairman, that at the conclusion, the licenses would be no longer in effect once the emergency was declared over. The governor has the ability to declare the emergency and then also then call it when it's at its conclusion. So that, Mr. Chairman, that's pretty much all of the bill, and we'll stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Senator Johnson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would like to know what the opinion of the Department of Homeland Security is on this bill.
Senator Hastert? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, We did not hear any testimony from the Department of Homeland Security, and frankly, their concern, I think, has more been with the terrorist kind of incident. A good part of this is aimed at expected natural disaster. We haven't had a pandemic flu since 1918 in this country, and even that one wasn't near as severe as we think we're sooner or later going to get. This was brought to us by the health department, and they had a deep concern for the kind of shortages that they thought they might encounter if you got one of these pandemics. But I don't recollect any testimony one way or the other from Homeland Security.
Senator Hastert.
And Mr. Chairman, certainly I would have that conversation before the final reading of the bill and just see if there, and ensure that there isn't, if that would help the Senator.
Thank you, Senator Hastert. Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Scott's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 36, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. All appears that Senate File 36 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next bill for consideration is Senate File 56. The reading clerk, please read the bill.
Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Construction, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, and Act Relating to Water Development Projects. It was referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Bebout, Geis, Johnson, Perkins, and Vasey. Senator Geis, Chairman.
Thank you. For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Geis?
Mr. Chairman, when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, I move that Senate File 56 do pass. And we're moving right along with five bills an hour. Now, I can give you a short version of this. You have the handouts. Or I can give you the long version, which will take about a half hour. The short version is I'll do the account one. These are all new projects, and will be $12,560,000. And in the next one on down is level three projects. These are all projects under construction. We'll go over to the last page. And total construction on count one is $20,600,000. And in account two, and we're just about out of money in account two for rehabs, is $10,299,000. I'd like to thank the Appropriations Committee for giving us $10 million to go in account two. That'll really benefit the water development. If there's no other questions, I think every one of you have a blue book there, and this will tell you exactly what page, what tab you can find it under. And if you can't find it, then there's five of us on the Water Development, Select Water Development Committee that can answer the question, and then there's five of us on the Ag Committee that can help you out. So with that, I would ask your favorable vote on Senate File 56.
Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Geis's motion with the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 56, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 56 has passed Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 71.
Senate File 71, Hathaway Scholarship Program Success Curriculum. Sponsored by Senator Schiffer, and Act Relating to Hathaway Scholarship Program. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Jennings, Massey, Von Fladern, Senator Coe, Chairman.
Chair. Senator Coe.
Move in committee the whole rise and report to do so with the due pass recommendation on Senate File 71 and defer to Mr. President for an explanation of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, I bring Senate File 71. It deals with the qualifications for the Hathaway Scholarship. And what it does, and specifically over on page 2, lines 6 and 7, is it puts in as meeting the qualifications the 2 years, two sequenced years of certified instruction in American Sign Language, and so on and so forth. And there's some other language over on page 3, which does exactly the same thing. Mr. Chairman, I bring this on behalf of the hearing impaired. American Sign Language is, in fact, its own language. It's the fourth most common language in the United States. It's got its own syntax, its own way of putting ideas together. It is exactly like a foreign language. It is a foreign language. But what's happening? If you're hearing impaired and you wish to go to the higher levels of the Hathaway, you have to take a foreign language. But, Mr. Chairman, that's like learning a foreign language through a foreign language. It's almost impossible. It's very difficult to do. A few, I think, are getting it done. It's incredibly time-consuming, and Mr. Chairman will recall that to meet the requirements of Hathaway, you're taking a full load every semester in high school, or I think you do anyway. But anyway, you've got to meet those requirements, and for someone that's hearing impaired to learn a foreign language, it's extremely time-consuming if they have to learn it through ASL. I would suggest to you that all of the skills that we want to see developed by putting the foreign language requirement in, those hearing impaired students already get it when they study ASL. It's being offered at the University of Wyoming now. There are some high schools that offer it. There are some community colleges that offer it. Quite frankly, the hardest thing about it is finding qualified instructors. And understand this is not translators. ASL as a distinct language is much different than just translation. Mr. Chairman, that's about the size of the bill. It was brought to my attention by a couple students. It just seems to me that we need to do this. I'll try and answer any questions.
Thank you, Senator Schiffer. Questions? Discussion? Are you ready for the question?
Question.
All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion with the committee the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 71, say aye. Those opposed, no. Senate File 71 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our discussion is Senate File 83.
Senate File 83, Retirement, Rehired Retirees, sponsored by Senator Job, and Act relating to the Wyoming Retirement System. It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the committee of the whole rise the report, it do so with a recommendation of do pass for Senate File 83. For a discussion of the bill, I turn it over to Senator Job.
Thank you, Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Last year in our 2007 session, we passed a bill clarifying how retirees can come back to work by a qualifying employer with the Wyoming Retirement System. In the language that we put in that bill, we unintentionally swept in substitute teachers at both the K-12 and post-secondary levels, which caused some accounting nightmares in those institutions because they never really had to pay retirement on these folks before. All this bill does is clarify the language so the substitutes are no longer swept in, and it only applies to a position that is a normally contributing member's position in the school district. So if a retiree comes back, takes a position that is usually a contributing position, then the employer pays the retirement on that to make the retirement system sound. Mr. Chairman, it's clarifying language, and I would ask for the body's support.
Thank you, Senator Job. Questions? Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if I understand right, if you're a substitute teacher, and we have some of them that's almost what their career is substitute teacher, those people don't qualify for any retirement, so we don't want to get the ones that don't qualify mixed up with the ones that already qualified. And I mean, am I assuming that right?
Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In the Wyoming retirement system, you're pretty much a full-time position. I mean, and it might be a part-time position, but there are clearly positions that are contributing and substitutes are not. You have to have a full-time permanent position so that you can be vested in 4 years, and that just doesn't work out for substitutes.
Thank you, Senator Job. Further discussion? Are we ready for the question? All's in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that with the committee the whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate file, what are we on, 83? Please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate file 83 has passed the committee of the whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate file 84. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
It was referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Thank you. For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Nicholas?
Thank you, Chairman. I move that the committee of the whole rise to report do so with a recommendation do pass for Senate File 84. For an explanation of the bill, I turn it over to Senator Job.
Thank you. Senator Job.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill does come with the support of the Wyoming Retirement System Board. It relates to the Paid Fireman's Plan B pension system. The members in this system, I'd like to clarify right from the beginning, are not eligible for Social Security. So this pension plan is their main source of income once they retire. This bill does two things. It changes the amount of the service pension, and what it does is after 25 years or at 25 years of service, they would qualify for 70% of their salary as a benefit. In order to do that, they have to increase their multiplier to get them to that 70%. And then the second part of this bill goes into the member contributions. And it would require, in order to do that, it requires a larger contribution into the pension account. But these firemen have come and said, we will take that out of our own pocket. So there is no general fund money involved here. It goes into the member contributions, and it increases their contribution from 6% to 8 5/10%. The repealer you see in Section 2 is just taking out the old multiplier because this bill puts in a new one. Mr. Chairman, it's a fairly clean bill, and it just helps them out a little bit, but they're willing to pay for their own retirement.
Thank you, Senator Job. Discussion? Senator Bebout.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, just a question. You said they do not pay into the Social Security program or not covered by that. Could you explain that further, please?
Senator Job?
Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I know the reason why. I just know that they are not in the Social Security system. Some of our plans, people are eligible for both, and they pay into both. I know in the big plan that's true. I'm not sure what the reason is for firemen, but I will find that out and come back to you.
Thank you, Senator Job. Further discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Nicholas's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 84, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 84 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Next bill for our consideration is Senate File 5. Will the reading clerk please read the bill? 1 minute.
Senate File 5, Peace Officers, Probation, and Parole Agents, sponsored by Senator Feck, and Act Relating to Criminal Offenses.
Okay, if we can just pause for just a moment here.
It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. The report's back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Senator Ross, Chairman.
Thank you. Heard the reading of the bill, however, Senator Feck.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 5. All of you should have received a handout that was just sent around that has at the top of it State Statute 6-5-204. Senate File 5 is a very easy bill, and all it does is add paragraph D to 6-5-204. That's the entire purpose. For the purpose of this section only, peace officer means as defined in the current statute and also includes any person employed by the State Department of Corrections on a full-time basis as a probation or parole agent performing those duties. The primary purpose of this is so that under paragraph B of that statute, a person who intentionally and knowingly causes or attempts to cause bodily injury to a peace officer, and this would now also include a probation and parole officer, engaged in the performance of their duty, is guilty of a felony punishable by imprisonment. This is the third time that this bill has been presented to the legislative bodies. The first time it was in a different section. And it grossly over-added to the powers of the probation and parole agents. It was not passed because it was far too broad. This time it is properly placed in the correct section. The second time it was presented, it simply ran out of time last year. We did not have an opportunity to hear it. The other legislative body did. At the committee meeting, the director of this group did provide examples of assaults that have occurred over the last 3 years against their probation and parole officers where this would have applied. So I would again emphasize, as I did in the preliminary presentation, this is not an expansion of law enforcement authority or power. This is simply putting probation and parole into 6-5-204 for the purpose of considering it an assault on a police officer when they get attacked while they're doing their duties. I stand for any questions.
Thank you, Senator Feck. Discussion or questions? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Feck's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 5, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 5 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 27. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 27, County Nuisance Abatement Authority, sponsored by Senator Ross, an act relating to counties. It was referred to Committee Number 1, Judiciary. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Burns, DeCarrier, Perkins, Ross, and Sessions. Chairman, Senator Ross.
Thank you. Have you heard the reading of the bill? What is your pleasure, Senator Ross?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 27, County Nuisance Abatement Authority. There is a standing committee amendment, and I'd ask that it be read in at this time.
Thank you.
Senate File 27, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 1.
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I will move standing committee amendment at this time, but first I wish to kind of explain the nature of this bill. As you know, our counties are creatures of the state, and they rely upon their powers by way of state statute. Currently under state statute, we have defined what a nuisance is as far as a county is concerned, and it's extremely limited. And it says, whoever maintains, uses, owns, or leases any structure, boat or vehicle for any purpose of lewdness, assignation, I don't know what that is, prostitution, or gambling, or for the manufacture, possession, or sale, or disposition of intoxicating liquor, or any controlled substance in violation of the law is guilty of a nuisance. What this bill does, ladies and gentlemen, is gives the counties the authority by resolution to abate nuisances. This bill did come before the legislature last year and failed, but hopefully with the standing committee amendment and a proposed committee of the whole amendment by myself in a little bit, I think the bill will be cleaned up and will be more palatable. And therefore, I move the standing committee amendment, and I'll discuss it at this time. One of the questions, of course, that you always get into with regards to a nuisance or so forth is, do I need the hat? is whether or not it's offensive in the eye of the beholder. Or what is? What constitutes a nuisance? So in an attempt to tighten that up in my discussions with a good senator from Natrona County, we added in language in the standing committee which defines a nuisance the commission would determine, that's the county commissioner, determines to be a threat to health or safety. Also in the committee, we had some questions raised by the mineral industry, oil and gas in particular, about whether or not their structures and so forth could be considered a nuisance. And so in the standing committee amendment, page 2, line 11, we go in and put in that for purposes of this paragraph, ongoing oil and gas development and mining at the location of their operation shall not be considered a nuisance. So we've defined or tailored down so that one of the things that the county can do under some of their general powers is to look towards health and safety. That being the case, I think we've narrowed that down, and I would urge your favorable consideration of the standing committee amendment.
Thank you, Senator Ross. If we can just take a moment and allow the Senate. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and we'll finish up this amendment before we take a pause. Are there any discussion or questions with respect to the standing committee amendment? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt standing committee amendment number 1 to the Senate file, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The standing committee amendment has passed. We can take a moment. We'd like to welcome Senator Mike Enzi here today. Thank you, Senator Enzi. Welcome. Senator Enzi, we hate to do this, but we have to brag about you just for a moment, if we may. I have a script that if I don't read this, I'll probably be in trouble, you know. Anyway, Senator Enzi, welcome. Since being elected to the United States Senate in 1997, Senator Enzi has cast votes and worked on some of the most pivotal and historic issues of our time. At the start of the 109th Senate until 2005, Senator Enzi became only the ninth Wyoming senator to ascend to the rank of chairman on one of the standing Senate committees. He is currently serving on the Committee of Banking, Housing, and the Urban Affairs, the Budget Committee, Committee of Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and the Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship. Senator Enzi grew up in Thermopolis, and Sheridan has a long record of public service to the people of Wyoming. He was elected as mayor of Gillette, then went on to serve in the Wyoming House of Representatives from 1987 to 1990, and then got really wise and went to the Wyoming Senate from 1991 to 1996. And even this week, he organized the GrowBiz conference here in Cheyenne, which we're already receiving reports back, has been very well received, and the effects are already being felt. Thank you very much. Once again, it's our pleasure to welcome to the floor of the United States Senator Mike Enzi. Thank you very much, Senator.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Leader. And it's always good to be back here. I watched you do that efficient vote just a few minutes ago. And on the House side, I watched him do an entire roll call. That would have been a whole morning's work for us in Washington. we can't vote unless there's unanimous consent. So if any one person objects, it may be because they're downtown doing a speech. We have to wait on the vote. You don't find us sitting in chairs like this and paying attention. That's part of the problem. But we may vote as many as three times a day. I bet you if they changed our pay to by the vote, we'd get a few more done. But that three votes a day includes amendments. That isn't just final votes. You do more than three bills a day, usually. And so John and I are trying to bring a little of the Wyoming efficiency to Washington. I've been working on it for 11 years, and he's been working on it for a year. I think we're making some progress. And John got his training here as well as I got my training here, and it does make a difference. The delegations back in Washington will tell you that if a person has had state legislative experience, it usually saves them 2 to 4 years on achieving their first bill. Of course, a bill back there takes about 6 years to do, so it's a little bit different. The average committee back there passes three bills every 2 years. And that's because, as you've watched floor debate, it usually takes us about 3 weeks to debate a bill. And we stay on one bill through all three readings. And then have a bunch of procedural votes and things that we might have to take on a bill in order to get it finished. So I did enjoy being the chairman. We've had the change in majority back there. Now I'm called the ranking member. And when I was chairman, my ranking member was Ted Kennedy. And he's considered to be the third most liberal person in the United States Senate. I'm considered to be the fourth most conservative in the United States Senate. And during my 2 years, we got 27 bills signed by the president, which means we came together and got some things done. And I want to share with you how we did that, because, again, I learned it here. I just didn't define it while I was here. And that's what we use, the 80% rule. You can agree on 80% of everything. Now, if you concentrate on the 80%, life's pretty good. If you concentrate on the 20%, it's like us debating in the United States Senate. Gets a little hot. And this works in your personal life, not just your legislative life. If you concentrate on the 80% that you agree on, life's good. You move over into that other 20%, whether it's with your spouse or your family or your people at work, it gets a little hot. And you want to be a little careful moving over into that area. It doesn't mean you can't. You just have to know what the consequences are going to be. Now, in the 80% of the bills that we agree on, we can take any one of those issues and we can agree on 80% of that issue. And people think that it's compromise that gets it done. It isn't compromise. Ted and I have a little trouble compromising. We have a little better luck agreeing. A compromise in Washington, I always explain, is since you're working on the budget now, and incidentally, the budget for us takes from February, usually till the next February, even though we're supposed to have it done in October. Again, we could learn some lessons from you. But on the budget process, the House may put in $10 million, the Senate may put in $100 million, and when we compromise, we put in $150 million. Yeah. That's how we got to $10 billion more than where we expected to be on last year's appropriation bill. And most of those were just kind of dropped in at the end. But if you leave out the things you can't agree on until you can reach agreement, which usually means finding a third way, we're kind of polarized back there. There are ideas that have been floating around for a long time, and the Republicans have one idea, and the Democrats have a different idea, and the two clash. And it increases the polarization. So as long as we're concentrating on those areas, nothing is going to happen. In fact, I've watched a couple of bills that have been changed substantially in order to get that agreement across party lines. But as long as it's called the same thing, nobody ever reads the detail of the bill. They just, oh, I remember that one. going to take away overtime from people in America. And we run off on that track and we don't get it done. So that 80% rule really works around here. And I appreciate all the work that you do get done. It's absolutely amazing to me. And I talk about it as I go around the state. This is a presidential election year. And that gets the press. But I tell the people that what they need to be concentrating on is the people that are really making the decisions for them on a daily basis, or at least while they're in session, and that's you folks. You will change their lives more each year than the president will in a whole four-year term. And you get down and handle the things specifically that people need to be done, not just in a general basis. So keep up the good work, and I've got to tell you, on the abandoned mine land money, you are guaranteed to get the money. What we're fighting now is whether it's through a paperwork process or a direct check, and we're going to try and get that direct check to you. But I do appreciate you looking at things that will keep the energy going in this state. It's been a good base for us to work from. It's given the money that you get to dole out as the year goes by, and there are some things that we can do on that. And every once in a while in the committee that I'm on, the main committee, Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, we'll get into this realm of kind of running the country down. And I stop the meeting and say, you know, I'm not aware of anybody trying to get out of this country. And that usually stops that train for a while. But we run into that on energy also. People saying, you know, that, well, Kansas canceled 7 coal-fired power plants. The Democratic leader is canceling all of the coal-fired power plants in Nevada. What's our country going to run on in energy? China is buying Wyoming coal. They're building a new power plant every week. And they recognize the value of energy over there. Now, we can do energy clean. The reason our coal sells so well is because it's a cleaner coal than the rest of the country. Last week, they mentioned that in Ohio, that they can mix 25% Wyoming coal with 75% Ohio coal, and they eliminate 82% of the mercury. I'm still trying to find out how the chemical equation works on that to do that, but that's cleaning up the atmosphere by using Wyoming coal. And I'm pretty sure that if we outline what needs to be done, there's an innovator somewhere in Wyoming that can figure out a way to do it, at least somewhere in the country. What we've always been able to grow on in the United States is our ability to innovate. Usually the products that we lose overseas are the old established ones that can be done by anybody by that time. The new ones, we keep inventing. And I'm going to have an inventors conference April 12th in Powell. I hope you'll encourage anybody you know, particularly the young people, to come to that. If they invent something, it can be made in Wyoming and shipped around the world. We can make a big difference, and we can keep our educated kids in Wyoming. And so far, we've gotten a lot of inventions out of that. Now, most of them have been by adults, but there are some spectacular things out there, and I think there can be some more. I just read about a guy that invented, this wasn't in Wyoming, unfortunately, a little distillery, and he uses used vegetable oil for making French fries, mixes it with some methanol and some lye in a little distillery in his garage, and he makes gasoline for 70 cents a gallon. So Americans can think of things that that will work. Another one that's a possibility, wind has some off times. Not sure when that is in Wyoming. But there's a fellow that's proposed now putting up a huge sail that will concentrate the wind into the generator during times of low wind. Now, he hasn't met Wyoming wind, but there are some possibilities out there that people are thinking about. Everything that needs to be invented hasn't been invented, and we might as well have it invented in Wyoming. And you have some of the finest minds at solving problems. Of course, you get a lot of help from your constituents, who are the ones actually doing the work. But I always enjoy this time of coming and seeing the real work being done on legislation. A lot of my old friends, people who have helped me along the way and taught me a lot, are still teaching me a lot, and I really appreciate it. So So thanks for letting me be here. It's good to see you. Good luck on what's always difficult, which is the money. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Senator. Committee of the Whole will come back to order. We are back on the bill, I do believe. Senator Ross, your screen disappeared. There you go. Thank you. Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. One of the things also that occurred in committee was some question about, in this whole area, what constitutes a nuisance, was some questions raised about farm ag productions and so forth, and what may constitute a nuisance there. And so that's the purpose behind Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, which I'd ask be read in at this time.
Please read the bill.
Senate File 27, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 11.
Senator Ross, did you move the bill? I mean, move the amendment?
No, I just asked for it.
Okay, thank you.
I'll move it now. I move, Mr. Chairman, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 27. What this amendment says, and it goes into the bill and says, nothing in this paragraph shall be construed to impair or modify any rights afforded to farm or ranch operations pursuant to the Wyoming Right to Farm and Ranch Act. Now, what is that? So that you go to that, and that's in a WS... 11-44-101, and it provides broad definitions of farm and ranch operations and specifically says the following: notwithstanding any other provision of the law, a farm or ranch operation shall not be found to be a public or private nuisance by reason of that operation if that farm or ranch operation conforms to generally accepted agricultural management practices. You know, the use of that land and so forth existed before adjacent land, new changes, all of that kind of stuff. So what this particular amendment does is make an interlineation to that particular statute, recognizes that that's already on the books, but I think also then alleviate some of the fear about what may constitute a nuisance in the area of ag and ranching and farming. So I'd urge your favorable consideration of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1.
Thank you. Are there discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion to adopt Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, say no. The Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 has passed. Back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So now we're back on the bill, and basically what does this bill say now? You allow your county commissioners, this is permissive, it doesn't have to happen. Your county commissioners have the authority to, by use of the Wyoming Administrative Procedures Act, to hold hearings and so forth, to decide if there's a need for a resolution in the area of nuisance abatement. But those nuisances are limited to that being health or safety, excludes mining, oil and gas, farm and ranch. But it does get at the heart of the real problem is, what do you do in a situation where you have a nuisance and it does affect health and safety? And I have one of those in my district, and you've heard me talk about it already. And we know that there's asbestos on that property, and it is an eyesore right in the middle of very nice properties. And the question is it friable or not friable? At some point in time, folks, it's going to be friable. When we get into this situation between DEQ and the county, county says we don't have any authority to clean it up. It is in the county. DEQ says, well, it's not friable, so therefore we don't have to clean it up, and we're stuck with who cleans this up. This will provide a solution. And so I'd urge your favorable consideration of this bill. It is really something very important, doesn't mean that all counties are going to adopt nuisance regulations or not, but it certainly allows local government, those closest to the people, to do what's appropriate, and I'd urge your favorable consideration.
Thank you, Senator Ross. Senator Scott.
Chairman, one question where there's a dispute between a property owner and the county commissioners over whether something does constitute a threat to health and safety. How is that dispute resolved?
Senator Ross.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. If there is a dispute, I would assume that it would be handled by any other kinds of disputes that would occur. If there was a dispute between the county and the landowner, it could be that you contest the authority of the county commissioners to do that. It may require a lawsuit. It may require a writ of mandamus or something of that nature. By what authority are you requiring this? But you still would have available to you all your options, either under the Administrative Procedure Act or access to the courts.
Okay, thank you. Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I guess looking at the co-sponsor on this bill has tried to get a nuisance law concerning dogs for years and has always failed. This seems a little broader. My question would be if, let's say I'm in agriculture, I get a blue heeler, but my blue heeler barks at the moon. My neighbor says it keeps me up all night long and it interferes with my health. And so the one neighbor complains to the county commissioners. They send somebody out there, and what do they do to my poor blue heeler?
Senator Ross, do you have an answer?
Mr. Chairman, probably feed it some dog biscuits. I don't believe that would qualify under the health and safety parameters of this bill. Now, I mean, we can think of all kinds of permutations about these kinds of things, but I think ultimately it comes down to, trusting your local government officials to do the right thing. I just don't see that coming into this. I guess somebody could say, yeah, it affects my health, but we've made a very specific exclusion here under farm and ranching, and blue heelers have been part of Wyoming ranching for a long, long time. And we've made a very specific exclusion to that, so I don't think that would occur.
Thank you. Let's go, Senator Hine.
Mr. Chairman, one quick question on the example you gave of a nuisance of properties that had some problem. Would the grandfather clause come in where that property then could or could not be cleaned up? How would that work? I'm under the impression that, we can't go back and bring something into compliance with a new law. And so that was already there. So if I'm explaining myself correctly, I just wondered how those situations would work.
Senator Ross?
Mr. Chairman, of course you have the provision in our law that you can't pass an ex post facto law, which would apply here as in any situation. Whether or not it would, certainly, if you're looking at the farming and ranching, by drawing in the Wyoming Farm and Ranch Act, those purposes for which the property was used before this ever, resolution was ever adopted would still remain in effect. So,
Senator Feck.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I want to go back to the blue heeler question. That very clearly falls under animal control and would be handled either by the animal control or county officials responsible for that. It would not fall under this nuisance.
Further Further discussion?
Question.
I read for the question. All those in favor of Senator Ross's motion that the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 27. Those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No.
No.
Senate File 27 has passed the committee of the whole. Senator Meyer.
Yeah, the privilege of the floor.
The floor is yours.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, in our balcony up here, we've got 18 individuals from across the state that are involved in the Wyoming Ag Leadership Program. It's a two-year program. They go across and have several seminars across the state in manners such as economics and natural resources. Over a two-year program, name it, and they've probably done it. They're down here in Cheyenne to learn a little bit about government. They'll also have, a Washington, D.C. trip they'll be going on and learn a little bit about the nation's government. So with the Senate, please help me welcome them to the Senate.
We welcome you to the Senate and hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. Thank you, Senator Meyer. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 54. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
But counties don't have...
Senate File 54, School Finance, Rebated Recapture, sponsored by the Management Council, and Act Relating to School Finance. It was referred to Committee Number 4, Education. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Anderson, Coe, Jennings, Massey, Von Platter, and Senator Coe, Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Coe?
Mr. Chairman, I'd move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report to do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 54 and defer to Mr. Vice President for an explanation of the bill.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think as I go through this bill, what I'll do is go through a kind of an outline of the bill. And I would simply say in the beginning, it's as important to understand what this bill does as well as what the bill does not do. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would say that in Senate File 54, one of the primary objectives here is to eliminate the archaic language that's currently in the statutes, which have to do with the implementation of the constitutional amendment that we recently enacted. You can see that repeal of that language, Section 2, page 2 of the bill. It goes on further to conform all existing statutory language to the constitutional amendment of November 2006, having to do with rebate recapture. It further then goes on to express that the continuing legislative intent, and if you look in Section 3, page 3, I believe, of the bill, you'll see the legislative intent that the amendment of the November 2006 is, in fact, what we would consider the supreme law of the state, and on this particular issue supersedes any pre-existing statutory language that might be contrary to that amendment. Goes on further in the bill to express continuing legislative intent that the amendment of November 2006 ended the practice of rebate recapture on the effective date of the amendment being 11-15-06. And then, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that that be read in at this time.
Thank you.
Excuse me, that is a committee of the whole amendment.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Go ahead and read, Mr. Clerk.
Senate File 54, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1, page 4, line 5.
Thank you. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And in order to track that in, I'm just going to refer you to page 4, lines 3 through 8. And I would say about the amendment, this was an amendment that was crafted through the cooperation of the interested principals or parties of those recaptured districts and state council to better satisfy the content of the bill, to better satisfy those rebate recaptured districts. And so in doing that, I would at this time call your attention to page 4, line 3 through 8, and we'll look as the language is, then we'll move the amendment, and I will give you then the amending language. As it is now, or it is before the amendment, it says that each school district which in any manner use such revenues for budgeting purposes shall accordingly adjust its district budget for school years 2006, 2007, and 2008, and budget adjustments in district revenue, detailing such revenues, it says that 2007, 2008, and budget adjustments and district revenue impacts to the Department of Education. That was not satisfactory to those districts. So what we did is went back in and simply say that as the amendment says, that then rather than adjust, they simply file with the Department of Education a report detailing such revenues in excess of the associated therewith. So with that, I think we have softened the conditions, and with that, I would move the committee of the whole amendment number 1 at this time.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Discussion on committee amendment, committee of the whole amendment number 1. You ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Anderson's motion to adopt the committee of the whole amendment number 1 to Senate file 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
Thank you.
The motion has passed.
And then further to move right along, what this proposal doesn't do, what this bill does not do, the proposal does not force the districts to repay to the state the amounts of rebated recapture funds that they have used in their budgeting process. These funds are now the subject of ongoing litigation. Rather, the bill establishes a process whereby the amounts of rebated recapture funds within the budget are reported to the department for subsequent referral to the Joint Appropriations Committee along with the Joint Education Committee. And so, therefore, to close the window of the district arguments in this litigation effective with the school year budgeting cycle this summer, that their statutory authority and obligation to budget in June and July trumps the repeal of the rebated recapture. So further goes on, and finally, to preserve the position of State of Wyoming has taken in the ongoing litigation that the Constitution amendment was self-executing and repealed by implication the old statutes which implemented rebate recapture prior to this passage. Essentially, two things are happening in this bill. It repeals archaic language that has essentially been trumped by the constitutional amendment recently passed, and then it, I think, softens the original language simply that school districts simply file with the State Department in regard to the use of those funds. So with that, Mr. Chairman, I would either pause for questions or ask for your favorable consideration in this issue.
Thank you, Senator Anderson. Questions? Discussion? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Coe's motion with the committee of the whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 54, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 54 has passed the committee of the whole. And the next bill for our consideration this morning is Senate File 12. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 12, Dispensing Rooms Products Sold, sponsored by Senator Peterson. An act relating to liquor licenses. It was referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. I, Senators Geis, Hastert, Johnson, Landon, Von Flatern, Senator Von Flatern, Chairman.
For the reading of the bill, what is your pleasure, Senator Von Flatern?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move when the Committee of the Whole rises to report. I request they do so with a favorable consideration of Senate File 12, Dispensing Room Products Sold, and I yield to Senator Peterson to explain this bill.
Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Once again, fellow senators, This is a bill that's trying to amend a statute that needs to be cleaned up a little bit as far as dispensing rooms are concerned. Just for your memory, to bring back to your minds this bill, the story of the constituent of mine that had moved some periodicals back into the section of his store that alcohol and malt beverage products were being sold, and a new liquor division inspector came through and by statute told him to get those periodicals out of that area and back onto the general public shelf. It was his attempt to try to police the adult items a little bit closer in his store. What this amendment does is offer these store, these concessionaires, the opportunity or the choice to, if they so choose, to move those periodicals. In on page 2, lines 15 through 17, it explains, opening up this bill or this statute somewhat, promotional products bearing the name of the licensed retailer, billiard and dart supplies, magazines, and periodicals. And that's the simplicity of the bill, and I would certainly stand for any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Preason. Senator Peterson. Senator Case.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The company I'm president of has a liquor license. I'd like to declare a conflict on this bill.
Okay, thanks, Senator Case. Further discussion? Are we ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Von Flatern's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 12, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 12 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 18. Will the reading clerk please read the bill?
Senate File 18, Business Entities, Revision, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, an act relating to business entities. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections Political Subdivision, reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman.
Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
All rises to report it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 18. There are no amendments, and I yield to Senator DeCaria before I pass out.
Senator DeCaria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, Senate File 18 is a companion bill and to Senate File 26, which is coming up right after it, which is the Registered Agents Bill. This bill gives the Secretary of State the power to enforce penalties, and really it consists of four key points. It reduces the length of time a business can be delinquent. It creates a criminal penalty for intentionally and willfully signing and providing false documents to the Secretary of State. It creates administrative provisions for failing to respond to a subpoena, and it improves administration provisions for not having a registered agent. Mr. Chairman, one of the problems that we have in the corporations laws right now, and some of you have probably heard about it, and I'm sure they'll talk about it on 26, but currently, you know, Wyoming has a problem with people being able to access who actually owns a corporation, and this is one of those attempts to try to tighten up the laws a little bit to try to eliminate some of the less scrupulous corporations. It's really not an attempt to go after anybody that's running an above-board, legitimate corporation, but there are a lot of corporations out there that are less than that, and so this bill is an attempt to clean up some of that and allow Wyoming to enforce its corporation laws with a little more vigor. Mr. Chairman, I'll walk you through sections of the bill. It's a kind of a lengthy bill, but really it's because it deals with the different parts of corporations. Pretty much does the same thing in each of different ones, but I'll talk about those as we go along. The first part, though, Mr. Chairman, on 1727-102, which is on pages 1 and 2, this is a penalty phase where it will spell out that a person who commits an offense by intentionally delivering a false document to the Secretary of State will be liable for a felony with a punishment not exceeding a $2,000 fine and 1 year in jail. Section 1715.112, Mr. Chairman, on pages 2 through 5, is the section that deals with limited liability corporations. And in that section, there are some changes that you'll see. The changes will do the following. It will provide for forfeiture of a franchise for filing false documents. It'll do the same for failing to make a legal response to a subpoena. If the corporation fails to provide records to the registered agent, if it has provided fraudulent information, or it cannot be served at the address in Wyoming that's given. Mr. Chairman, it removes a pre-publication requirement when a limited liability corporation's charter is forfeited. It also allows a limited liability company to reinstate during a two-year window with a retroactive reinstatement date, and it allows the Secretary of State to classify the limited liability corporation as delinquent at the time the limited liability corporation is notified of delinquency. Mr. Chairman, then you go to the bottom of page 5 through 6, which is 1716.1420, which is profit corporations. Pretty much does the same for profit corporations. On page 9 and 10, 1716.1530 is for foreign profit corporations. These are all different sections of the statutes, I'm sure, as you're well aware, Mr. Chairman. But, you know, we have to clean it up in all the different sections. On the bottom, on pages 11 and 12, 17, 19, 14, 20, is nonprofit corporation. And on pages 15 and 16 starts the section 17, 19, 15, 30, which are foreign nonprofit corporations, Mr. Chairman. And pretty much, you know, similar with all the sections as far as the corporations. Mr. Chairman, on page 17 is section 3, which are the repealers. And Mr. Chairman, on page 18 is section 4, which gives an effective date of January 1st of 2009. This allows all the corporation filings to come around, give them time in order to make that happen instead of doing that in the middle of the year, Mr. Chairman. And with that, Mr. Chairman, I would be happy to stand for questions and would urge the body's favorable consideration of Senate File 18. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator DeCaria. Questions? Discussion? Are you ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 18, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 18 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 20. Senator Schiffer.
Mr. Chairman, may I have the privilege of the floor? The
floor is yours.
Thank you. Members of the Senate, I've got a memo here, and I'll just read it. It's from the Office of the Governor. It's to President John Schiffer and Speaker Roy Cohey from Dave Friedenthal, Governor, dated February 21st, 2008. Subject, delisting of Rocky Mountain Gray Wolf. And I'll just read the text. Please advise the Senate that I have just heard from Lynn Scarlett, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Interior. There will be an announcement today that the Northern Rocky Mountain population of gray wolves will be delisted. We have been given assurances that the delisting rule will appear in the Federal Register within the next few days. My thanks go to the legislature for its great work and dedication on this issue. We will hold our collective breath that the delisting rule appears in the Federal Register by February 28th, which is the legislatively mandated deadline. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
It's always nice to be the bearer of good news. Senator Scott.
Chairman, I'm very gratified by those kind words, but I, for one, would like to say that I think that we ought to thank the governor for his leadership in this effort as well. It's been a joint effort by all of us here in Wyoming.
You're here. Thank you, Senator Scott. Senator Sessions.
Mr. Chairman, I just see some students coming in at the top, and I thought before we go on, I'd like to take this chance to recognize them.
Sure.
These are the students that are here for Wyoming Educational Access Day. And it's the students and staff of the Wyoming Trio and Gear Up programs that are here today to bring awareness of educational access issues. Trio and Gear Up are federally funded projects that provide assistance and support to low-income and first-generation students from junior high to college to aspire, gain admissions to, and succeed in higher education. And they're here today to represent many, many projects. The students, they're the ones that provide us the goodie bags that we found on our desks, and they will be in the cafeteria at the lunch break at lunchtime to visit with you. And I will have to say, at my junior high, we have the Gear Up program, and we tracked it last year and on grades and things, and it has made a difference, and I just have to tell you one thing. I went in there and I called a kid down, and he sent word down to me that he was not coming because all I did was nag him. And so I sent the word back up to him that was my job, was to nag. So, but I hope these students, I'm sure they don't feel that way, because there's many, many wonderful activities that they take part in and are exposed to, and I would like them to welcome to the Senate. Thank you.
Thank you. Students, we hope you enjoy your day at the Capitol. We are back on the bill, Senate File 26. We're open for discussion. Are there discussion or questions? Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I don't believe that was read in. I think the letter came before that was bill was read in. I might be wrong.
Is that right? Oh, we haven't read it in? I'm sorry.
Senate File 26, Business Entities, Registered Agents, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, and Act Relating to Business Entities. It was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivision. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. It was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriation. Reports back with a favorable recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
Okay. Thank you. You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 26. I am somewhat disturbed to report to the committee that there is not, the registered agents have not met they're not on the endangered species list. In fact, they're very successfully proliferating through the Capitol and spend a lot of time talking to us about this bill. Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment, and I might ask to be read in at this time if the chair grant leave to discuss the bill and the standing committee amendment as we go through. Standing committee amendment number 1. There's another one from the Appropriations Committee, too.
Okay, let's go to standing committee amendment number 1. Please read in the bill.
Senate File 26, standing committee amendment number 1, page 1, line 6.
Thank you. Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I would move standing committee amendment number 1 to Senate File 26. Mr. Chairman, this, of course, is the bill that generated so much controversy before the session. We got lots of emails, and I'm happy to say that a considerable amount of that controversy has abated as we've worked through and moved through the bill. I think you'll find that we ended up doing considerable amending to the bill. We ended up with a standing committee amendment, which I think is probably not really liked by, part of it is not liked by the Secretary of State's office, and part of the bill is not liked by all the registered agents and the legal community, so maybe we came out on this thing okay. I'm not sure. You'll be able to judge for yourself. What this bill essentially does, Mr. Chairman, is to create a new section of law, that would be Wyoming Statute 1728-101 through 1728-111, which largely is a compilation of going into each of the separate business entity laws, pulling out the requirements about having a registered agent and an office in Wyoming, consolidating everything here so that we treat all these business entities, registered agents, the same and apply the same requirements to all. What the bill in general does is to require that those registered agents maintain a higher standard of a relationship with the corporations and other business entities that they provide this service for. The key point, I think, is that we are requesting with this legislation that we know who is behind the corporation or other business entity, that the registered agent keep those records, maintains them current, so that we can indeed serve papers on a registered agent. There has to be someone there that can accept service of process, and that we can get the information about the corporation. The entire bill is brought about because of concerns that Wyoming has maybe achieved infamy in terms of the fact that there are perhaps many fraudulent corporations using the good name of Wyoming and our corporate statutes to incorporate for all around the country and even with operations overseas for nefarious purposes. The bill, it was an extraordinary thing. The man downstairs testified, kicked off the testimony in the corporations committee, and that would be, I have to say, the governor, because the other man downstairs, the Secretary of State, also came up. And it was an extraordinary thing. I don't think I've ever seen that except for in appropriations where the chief executive came to discuss a bill with the committee. Real quickly as we go through it, and I'll drop the standing committee amendment in as we go. Page 2, 1728-101, registered offices and registered agents. Each business entity shall continuously maintain in this state a registered agent a registered office and a registered agent. And it goes on to prescribe exactly the requirements of that entity, some timelines required. And if you go to page 4, you'll see that business entity is now defined to mean a corporation, nonprofit corporation, limited liability company, limited partnership, cooperative marketing association, statutory trust, or registered limited liability partnership, whether foreign or domestic. All those things are captured in this area. On line 4, page 13, I'm sorry, page 4, line 13, I apologize, there is a section of the Standing Committee Amendment on page 1, lines 11 through 19. And this is adding a new requirement defining a written agreement and what that means. I'd like to read that to you. For purposes of this chapter, written agreement or contract creating an agency relationship means any written document granting a natural person representing a registered agent the authority to accept service of process on behalf of any entity served by the registered agent. A single document may serve as authorization for each natural person representing the registered agent without listing each natural person individually. This solved a bit of a problem. The registered agent community was saying, you know, if you have a named person that has to serve process to, what if that person's no longer here? What if they're not here that day? We change people over time. This makes it more flexible and allows for that service of process. If you keep going through 1728-102 on page 4 of the bill, it says how we change the registered office or the registered agent and the information that's required. It continues on page 5. All about changing address and name and how it's done. Clear up to page 6. Bottom of page 6 covers the resignation of the registered agent. And you'll see that when we get to page 7, and this is about a registered agent may resign by signing and delivering to the Secretary of State for the filing, you know, da-da-da-da-da. The last sentence of that first paragraph on page 7 says the statement shall be addressed to any officer or controlling member of the entity other than the registered agent. This is how a person resigns from being the registered agent, Mr. Chairman. We have proposed language in the Standing Committee Amendment. It's would be lines 26 through 28 of page 1, and my error, I'm sorry, lines 21 through 25 of page 1, where we delete controlling and insert other authorized person. We're not going to talk, and you'll see this throughout the bill, but we're going to delete where it says shall be addressed to any officer or controlling member. That'll be now addressed to any officer or other authorized person. Mr. Chairman, you'll see that one come and go several different times. If we continue, I need more hands. And if we go clear over to page 9, we're talking about 1728-104, bottom of the page, service on a business entity. And, Mr. Chairman, it says a business entity's registered agent or the natural person having an agency relationship with the registered agent as provided in WS 1728-101 shall accept service of process, notice, or demand required or permitted by law that is served on the entity. Mr. Chairman, that's an important component. And if you come over to page 11, the committee dealt with made a small change, lines 5 through 11, that talks about every entity shall provide to its registered agent and keep current the name, business address, and business telephone number of a natural person who would be able to receive communications from the registered agent, and it is designated as the communications contact. There's a theme going through here. We have a substantial part of the Standing Committee Amendment is where we allow for the registered agent to keep this information, or if they can make sure that the information is kept under the Articles of Incorporation at the Secretary of State's office, they can avoid keeping the information. And it's going to be the subject of another amendment a little bit later on, but this piece, as I'm in the bill, there's a part of that that's right here. So on line 6, and we're still on page 11, after the word agent, we would add the words or the Secretary of State. Lines 13 and 14, commercial registered agent registration required. Of course, it details the registration requirements of the commercial registered agent. We're trying to find what is a commercial registered agent. You know, someone that takes care of one or two corporations isn't really a commercial registered agent. That's not what they do for a living. And you can see some kind of tangled up language in section B, subsection B, starting on line 23. And it whips over to the next page, but I'll read it. The registration requirements of this section shall not apply to a person who serves as a registered agent for 10 or fewer business entities, and prepare for the tongue twister, including entities served by a registered agent if the registered agent is one of those entities served. I can't do it. Nobody else on the committee could do it. And someone from the registered agent community suggested some language that says, I'll start at the top of the page, registered agent for 10 or fewer business entities unless the registered agent is serving as a registered agent for an entity or entities that is serving as a registered agent for more than 10 business entities. Believe it or not, it's better when you look at it in writing, Mr. Chairman. I'm sure you're giving me that look. But the idea is you don't, if your business, you're a registered agent for other people that are registered agent, and within this scheme of your operations, you get more than 10, then you fall into the area of the commercial registered agent. Isn't this fun? You should have been there, Mr. Chairman. You would have loved this bill.
I was for part of it.
I guess you were, Mr. Chairman. As we continue on page 12 and page 13, there's a couple other instances where we have that controlling Remember back to the controlling member we talked about? We go back to authorized person on that. One of those occurs on the bottom of page 12, line 20. Another one occurs on page 13, line 6, and page 13, line 12. Then we get to registration requirements, Mr. Chairman. And a commercial registered agent shall obtain a registration by filing an application with the Secretary of State. The application shall be executed and sworn under penalty of perjury and contain information the Secretary of State requires by rule, including a bunch of requirements. You can see, you can see more of those requirements on page 14. You will note that line 13 of page 14, there's that same thing, who controls, and we made the same amendment there. Page 15, line 21, duties of the registered agent. We actually made a change there. We changed it to duties of the registered entity, Mr. Chairman. Keep going with me. There's a small amendment from the Standing Committee amendment on line 12. I'm sorry, page 16, line 12 and 15. There's a renumbering that occurs there. That's at the top of page 2 of the first Standing Committee amendment. And then, Mr. Chairman, what I'd like to do is to, this is the biggest change of all, would be on line 15, or after line 14 on page 17. This is the amendment I alluded to earlier when we said, you know, this bill is all about registered agents keeping this information, having it be available when we serve a subpoena, and we can collect the information on the entities they're registered agents for. This amendment, and this amendment was not supported by the Secretary of State's office, but this amendment allows the registered agent to have an agreement with the company that they're the agent for, that the company, through the registered agent, will maintain the information as part of the Articles of Incorporation at the Secretary of State's office. And that's what this long paragraph that you see at the upper part of page 2 of the first Standing Committee Amendment, the gist of it is at the beginning. If the registered agent and the entity agree, then the information specified in all the subdivisions of this section and the information specified elsewhere may be filed with the Secretary of State as part of the entity's organization document or an amendment thereto. If the information is filed with the Secretary of State, then the registered agent has complied with the requirement to maintain such information under this section. It shall be the entity's obligation, not the registered agent's obligation, to file with the Secretary of State the appropriate document updating any information within 60 days of any change until the entity's first annual report is accepted for filing with the Secretary of State. Any subsequent changes shall be submitted with the annual when the annual report is due for filing. If the information is to be filed with the Secretary of State, then the registered agent shall verify that the information has been filed. And, Mr. Chairman, this was kind of an attempt to, I'll tell you, we tried to make everybody happy, and this does not make everybody happy. And this is not supported by the Secretary of State's office. But what it does is it says, look, registered agent, you don't have to keep this information in your office if you cause it to be happening at the Secretary of State's office. That's the gist of it. If I continue on to page line 16, 17, 28, 108 of the bill is all about the production of records when they're subject to periodic examination by the Secretary of State. There is a small insertion on page 18, line 6. Again, it follows the same line where it talks about the Secretary of State shall hold any records obtained pursuant to this section confidential except for information already on file with the Secretary of State as part of a public document. That's the Standing Committee amendment that go on line 6. Mr. Chairman, go on further. Bottom of the page, we can talk about actions against registered agents, the civil penalties that can be imposed. Might hear from that legal community on that. I don't know. Talks about the failures, whether you failed to make the application fee, failed to maintain records, can't be served, or willfully violated or willfully failed to comply with the provisions of the chapter. Mr. Chairman, we get to page 20, and we have an amendment at the top of that full paragraph that begins on line 5 of page 20, the one that says a registered agent is presumed to have complied with WS 1728-107 if he has timely requested the required information from the entity by certified letter. This is where you ask the registered agent for information and the entity that he works for. You send them a certified letter and they don't comply. We're changing that language to a register, and this, you'll find this on page 2 of the Standing Committee Amendment, lines 30 through 40. A registered agent has complied with WS 1728-107 if he has timely requested from the entity, either by certified letter or through an engagement letter or other similar document, that the required information be provided and be kept current within 60 days of any change until the entity's first annual report is accepted for filing with the Secretary of State. And notice that they within 60 days until the first annual report. That's an important component of the bill. Apparently, when companies are doing bad things, they usually don't wait till the end of that first year. They get their incorporation right away. They do their bad stuff. So you got to keep after them a little bit more that first year, Mr. Chairman. Continuing on through, talk about the defenses that the with respect to a violation. And finally, on page 22 of the bill, 1728-110, reinstatement. That's how you get reinstated if you've been bummed out of the registered agent list. Page 23, 1728-111, gives the Secretary of State office the ability to do rules and regulations. In section 2, there's some there's an addition of a statute of, on line 20, we're adding 174131A and B in front of that list. And this, of course, is under the rules and regulations. At the bottom of page 24, still in the same section, we're bringing in a new part, which is from existing law, 174141, which is disposition of fees. That was not in the bill before, and that is existing language. You can see that on the third page of the Standing Committee Amendment. We're almost done, I promise. And it talks about hold on a second here. Yeah, the state, if you look on page 3 of the Standing Committee Amendment, the state treasurer shall credit 60% of all fees collected, da-da-da-da-da. And it has a limit on the fees, which really do relate to the amount of money that the Secretary of State's office turns into the general fund. You'll find that the next part of the Standing Committee Amendment is all about the appropriations, Mr. Chairman. And I don't really think I should waste the committee's time. The Appropriations Committee threw out what the Standing Committee did, and they have their own ideas about that. I suspect it's a better idea, so I'm not going to discuss that part of the Standing Committee Amendment. We'll just go ahead and approve it, though. There's no sense dividing it out, and they'll fix it. Thank you. I stand for questions.
Thank you, Senator Case. Questions or discussion on Standing Committee Amendment 1 to Senate File 26? Senator DeCaria.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to divide the amendment. It's a simple.
A simple little division.
It is. It's clean. Mr. Chairman, the first part of the amendment would be page 1, lines 26 and 27. Mr. Chairman, page 1, lines 44 and 45. Mr. Chairman, on page 2, it would be lines 8 through 28, Mr. Chairman. Oh, Mr. Chairman, excuse me. It has to be from page 2, line 6 through lines 28. That would be division number 1, Mr. Chairman. The remainder of the amendment would be division number 2.
So, Senator Kerry, if I can just confirm your Your Division 1 would consist of lines 26 and 27 on page 1 of the amendment, lines 44 and 45 on page 1 of the amendment, and on page 2, lines 6 through lines 28 of the amendment. Those three three groups of lines being consisting of Division 1 and everything else being Division 2?
That's correct, Mr. Chairman.
Okay, the Chair finds that that is divisible in that regard. Senator DeCaria.
Mr. Chairman, on Division 1, Mr. Chairman, this is the part that the Secretary of State's office did not like, and it really kind of negates a lot of the other provisions of the bill, because, Mr. Chairman, what you're trying to do in this piece of legislation is you're trying to put a Wyoming face on a corporation and have a point of contact for those corporations. Mr. Chairman, if you remove these provisions out of the bill, we lose some of that, and we kind of go back to where we're at now without being very clear about, you know, who are we going to contact and where the information for the corporation lies. Mr. Chairman, the provision at first blush on saying, well, you can either file the information with the Secretary of State's office or with the registered agent, that sounds good in theory, but in practice the problem becomes is there's no provision to say that, you know, anybody that can check on it. The problem with that is you're going to fall into this area where an unscrupulous corporation just won't file either place, and nobody will know that they haven't filed in either place, and we're back where we were right at the beginning. There isn't any provision in there that will really be clear on where you're going to have to go to make the contact for that corporation. And so with that, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, but Mr. Chairman, I would urge the body to defeat this part of the amendment. Mr. Chairman, if there aren't any questions, the rest of the amendment is great, does good stuff, and I would urge passage of that. But, Mr. Chairman, on Division 1, I would urge the body to vote no.
Thank you. Senator Scott?
Mr. Chairman, speaking on and in favor of Division 1, what you've got here is a dispute between the Secretary of State and the registered agents as to where information ought to be maintained, and the agents are saying, why should we have to keep the records when there's a public matter with the Secretary of State? And in a lot of these cases, if the information is filed there at the Secretary of State's office, I don't see any real purpose that's required by having duplicate information at the registered agent's office. There is an obligation of the registered agent to make sure that it is on file at the Secretary of State, if there's some question. I don't see any problem with the amendment. It's really a fairly arcane dispute over who's going to have to maintain what records.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm guessing someone else is going to, from outside of the state, law enforcement is going to call somebody in the state to find out about this corporation. I'm assuming the first place they're going to call is the Secretary of State. They don't have a directory of registered agents. And then the Secretary of State would have to look up who the registered agent was, and they'd track them down through that area. I'm assuming that's how the process would work if you defeat this. But I thought we were supposed to make it a little more law enforcement friendly, just not less fraud friendly. So why would we defeat this? Because you want somebody to call the Secretary of State's office and have all the answers for them so they can continue their investigation in a reasonable time period. It's kind of like central filing with bankers. I mean, if I got a lien on somebody, I can call the Secretary of State's office, and I know, you know, five or six other people that have a lien on that individual, and I know where I'm sitting. And it central filing makes it a lot easier. This looks like it's more like central filing for corporations. That's what our Secretary of State's office does. I'm wondering why the resistance.
Senator Jennings.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just went on the Secretary of State's website. They do have a list of registered agents. It's less than 100. Then you go over to corporations and you just start randomly picking companies that you know that aren't in Wyoming. And there's names in the database that don't match the names that are in the Secretary of State's registered agent list. And so I think that there's some kind of who is supposed to be storing it. Should it be the Secretary of State? Should it be a registered agent? If the registered agent store it, how are we going to get that information to the Secretary of State? And right now there seems to be a disconnect on that.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, this is sort of a, I guess this is where we came out in the middle on the committee. It was not, you know, at the time the Secretary of State actually wasn't in the room, and I think he said he'd actually called working another bill, and he really doesn't like this. I'll be real straight up with you. He doesn't like it at all. And in fact, he told me that he thought it really hurts the bill and guts the bill is the words he used. I'm not so sure, and I'll tell you why. We really listened to this, and there was a former member of this body who was there, who I have a lot of respect for, and he proposed a different solution to this whole thing. He went into every single corporate entity law, and he said, let's add that this information is required to be kept at the Secretary of State. It was a very elegant solution, and I think that we might even look at that solution more as we do our interim work on the corporation laws. And basically what that former senator's proposal was, let's just make them file this information with the Secretary of State's office and start from there. Well, we have this situation with the registered agents, and the practicality of this is we're trying to get somebody that knows the corporation well enough that law enforcement can find these people. And the registered agents themselves proposed that, all right, we're willing to keep that information that you want, but we would also like to propose that if we can work it out with our client where that information is also maintained or is actually maintained under our articles of incorporation at the Capitol in the Secretary of State's office, then don't make us liable or require us to keep it if we can make sure it's there. That's really the gist of this. Now, there's definitely a difference of opinion on it, and I frankly don't think I understand all the ramifications of it. I'll be perfectly honest. So I guess I'm not going to speak entirely for or against this division, but there's an elegance about this that I did appreciate. So,
thank you. Senator Nicholas.
If I may just ask the chairman of the committee, but here's a more typical situation, and I know that there are big entities going with they're out-of-state entities, and they file with corporate registered agents, but here's what typically happens. I'm a registered agent for, I don't know, many, might be 20 or 30 corporations. They happen to be my friends, my clients. They've got closely held corporations, small companies. They're just like you could buy ranchers, have corporate entities. So then we file the corporation papers, and they come in and they said, who should be the registered agent? And I said, well, suppose you get sued. Would you rather have the sheriff come to me, or would you rather have sheriff come to your home where your kids are? And I said, well, that's easy. If we're going to get sued, I'd rather the sheriff come to you, and you know how to get a hold of me. And I said, sure, that's fine. I'd never charged a dime for one of those. I've been a registered agent for probably these 20, 30 entities for 10 or 15 years. I've never seen a sheriff show up. And I don't charge my client a dime. My clients don't expect to be charged a dime. And they file their annual reports every year. They don't send them to me to say, Phil, am I doing it right? They know how to do it. They get on the website. They file their reports. And I'm a registered agent for companies that I haven't looked at their corporate papers. I don't review their minutes. They're closely held companies. And there's never a problem. Now, if I have to become a registered entity and I'm as an agent now obliged to look and see what they filed, make sure that they're doing their papers right, then I'll do that. I'll charge them a couple hundred bucks every year. And it seems to me that if you're reaching out to collect those group of people, it's an impact that one is not necessary, it's overkill. So in this regard, if you might address that and what's the outcome? Are everybody here that has little closely held corporations, are they now going to, and if they want that sheriff to show up at my office instead of their home, do they now have to charge me Do I have to charge them a couple hundred dollars a year just to do something that's not a big deal?
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, I suppose that this is in line with the division. I mean, we're still on the divided Standing Committee Amendment, the first division, which the issue is allowing this information to be kept at the Secretary of State's office or not. And so I think it is on point to your question. I guess the biggest thing I would say is, yes, we want to put a face with corporations now. The times have changed. We really do want to know who is using Wyoming's good name. And if need be, there's big things happening in the world, whether it's people smuggling, money smuggling, weapons, drugs. We're one of the easiest states to get a corporate status, and we require the least amount of information, at least as low as the top three. I've heard of Nevada, Delaware. They may be more in the bottom than we are. So it's easy to be anonymous in Wyoming. And I guess what we've come down, and it's going to hurt the very people that you're talking about, good chairman of the Appropriations Committee, your friends, you know, they're either going to have to pay you to be the face of that corporation, and you're going to have to maintain that records, or under this amendment, you would have the ability to say, to have an agreement with them whereby you ensure that the information is kept at the Secretary of State's office. I don't think you're really relieved of obligations too much in either event, but you would not actually have to keep the information. It could be at the Secretary of State's office. Indeed, your friends will be caught in the net, but it's the net that's being cast for all these other entities throughout the world that are using Wyoming corporate laws.
Let's go, Senator Nicholas. And
the amendment, and I do wonder, and we ought to talk about whether or not some of these requirements ought to be imposed on domestic corporations that have a registered office in the state. But let's take the ranchers. I'm a registered agent for a lot of ranchers, and I can guarantee you that if the sheriff wants to go out, and I can pick up the phone and call them. I know their telephone numbers. I can leave a message, and they'll return the call for me. I've got Northern Albany County clients that if the sheriff went out to find that rancher, they might be 4 days before they find that rancher. And he's not doing anything other than doing his job. And I agree and support a provision that provides that the deal is I'll be your registered agent. It'll be easier for him to serve me. I'll get it to you. I'll send it in the mail to you. And but with respect to who are your current officers and things like that, I expect you to put that in your annual report. You support it. And then I don't have to worry about it. I know my client's honest, and they'll deal with it. But in some senses, I wonder if we are reaching the overkill at this for those corporations that are domestic, have registered offices. You walk in the sheriff and they say, do you know X, Y, Z Land and Cattle Company? Oh, yeah, I know them. They're up there. I can find them. As opposed to some entity that does not house its register or its principal place of business in the state.
Nicholas. Senator Larson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Actually, I believe I agree with the good senator from Laramie. But I'm very happy to know that he does not charge his clients just for going out. The problem I have is there are many attorneys, registered agents, and registered agent who that's all they do. They do charge them. They send them a bill for a couple of $100. But they don't want to know about them or have anything to do with them or do anything. They just want to keep sending them that bill every year. I believe it is predominantly foreign corporations. But some way, somehow, if we don't do this kind of thing, there is no one who can know. Many registered agents are nothing but a lockbox. That's all they have is a lockbox. They don't want to be required to what I think is prudent if you're going to send them a bill. If you're going to send them a bill every year for services rendered, I think you ought to know a little bit about who they are, what they're doing, and where they're still going. And that's what I think the intent of this particular piece of legislation is. I think that's one of the intents of the amendment. Part one of the amendment is that you're being asked on the division to defeat, because many of these organizations and some big registered agent firms or so on want to get paid, but they don't want to have any responsibility as who the client is, where they're going. They want the Secretary of State's office to have to do that. I think probably there is a balance there that can be struck as the thing moves along. But to say, and we had, Mr. Chairman, lobbyists, I think there were Philadelphia, Florida, I don't know, from all over the United States of registered agent companies that want to do that very thing. They want to maintain a lockbox. They don't want to have to store or keep any information. They don't want to meet any of the requirements that would happen if law enforcement has to get there, but they do want to go send them a bill every year for doing that. So I think that we do need to require them to keep a certain amount of information. One of the suggestions is, of course, that after the first year, when they do have to file their incorporation papers, that after the first year, that maybe then it is all right to say you will get it from the Secretary of State's office. But for the first year, very clearly, I believe that the registered agent should be required to keep that. And so I would urge you to defeat this part of the amendment.
Ready for the question? Question having been called, all those in favor of Division 1 of the of Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed?
No.
We need division. Is all those in favor of Division 1, please rise. Senator Case?
I'm sorry, announce your vote, sir. I interrupted you. I apologize.
Division 1 has failed, committee the whole. Senator Case?
Oh, Mr. Chairman, I believe, the Standing Committee Amendment, Division 1 has failed. Mr. Chairman, I don't think the second part is controversial. I think they were largely amendments that we developed in cooperation with the Secretary of State's office. I hope you pass them through, and I hope I never have to come up against the ranking minority member on my committee again. He's a killer.
Okay. Any further discussion on Division 2? All those in question having been called, all those in favor of Division 2 of the Standing Committee Amendment, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Division 2 passes. We are back on the bill.
There is a second Standing Committee Amendment. Let's just take that up.
Okay. Can we please read the second Standing Committee Amendment?
Senate File 26, Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 6.
Senator Nicholas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Second reading amendment, or Standing Committee Amendment Number 2, amendment to Senate File 26. This deals with the funding mechanism for the bill. What it does, frankly, is it turns it back, restores the funding as it was originally placed in the bill. The first standing committee had come up with a funding mechanism that would have intercepted some revenues that are collected, which would have really taken this funding off profile out of the budget so that it would be, in a sense, self-funding. our conclusion is that really we ought to be seeing the cost of these programs, let the fees flow to the general fund, then have the general fund pay the cost so that we can see what the costs are. We'd urge you to support the amendment.
Thank you. Discussion on Standing Committee Amendment 2. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, a question in one line of the Standing Committee Amendment number 2. On the page 24, line 19, reference deleting the first Standing Committee Amendment. Mr. Chairman, the effect of that Standing Committee Amendment was that for this biennium, there would be $700,000 available, but effective with the start of the next biennium, that any money that was available would have to come through the appropriation process, or it would just be credited to the general fund. And if you adopt the Standing Committee Amendment, you're going to have $350,000 that's going to be available bypassing the whole Appropriations Committee. And I was wondering why the Appropriations Committee felt that it was a good idea to have that $350,000 that's in existing law continue to bypass the whole appropriations process.
Senator Nicholas.
I'm going to have to examine that more closely. The what we thought we were simply doing is going back to restoring the original Section 4 and 5 methods of funding, and I don't see that if we restore that language. My assumption is you're back to the original fiscal note, which doesn't reflect that. So I don't see that impact if we restore the original sections. If that's not the case, then I need to further investigate it.
Senator Scott.
You are back to the original fiscal note, but the effect of the Standing Committee Amendment, under existing statute, there's $350,000 of this money that flows to the Secretary of State's office entirely outside our budget process. The effect of the Standing Committee Amendment was to, for the next biennium, too late for this biennium, the budget's already set forth, we know what we're doing here, we know what's going to cost, but the effect of the Standing Committee Amendment was that for the next biennium, all that money, including that $350,000 that now just goes right past the budget process, is going to come through the budget process. And I really wondered if that was what you were trying to do.
Senator Meyer?
I think the $350,000 was in current language and for other programs not associated with this program. We didn't want to get back in and look at that particular diversion without knowing fully what those other programs were, and that wasn't part of our discussion because we're limited basically to this bill and the budget. But it is something we can definitely look at, and as you well know, the good senator from Natrona is adept at diversion programs, and it doesn't surprise me that he spotted this one.
Mr. Chairman,
Nicholas,
just to make sure, I think right now there is a provision in an existing statute that provides that certain programs in the Secretary of State are funded through a stream of revenue that comes off of filings from certain entities. And there is an appropriation in the Secretary of State's office where they have a request to appropriate $620,000 out of this revenue stream. Under existing statute, however, there is a cap on the amount they can divert, which is $350,000. So what's the impact of it is it's an interesting anomaly where we have the Secretary of State who has appropriated $620,000 for certain investigations of entities, but we know that the revenues coming into them are capped because of this $350,000, so you have an appropriation for $620,000. And they can only spend $350,000. That doesn't change. What would have happened with this language is this up to $700,000, you lift the cap to $700,000, And so now that releases that authority of the Secretary of State to flow or to spend up to 700, doubles the spending authority. What we did is just restore it back to status quo. And it seems to me that we ought to look at that other funding mechanism, the Secretary of State, where we actually fund them at $628,000, but they can only spend $350,000. It's a weird deal. This maintains that, but it doesn't expand it. For this new program, it's general funded. And to the extent that there are new dollars required to implement the program, it's under the existing bill. We said leave it there. But there's no, through this bill, we're not going to correct the old system, so we leave the old systems right where it was.
Thank you, Senator Nicholas. Further comment on Standing Committee Amendment 2? Ready for the question. All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 2 to Senate File 26, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. Standing Committee Amendment 2 has passed. We're now back on the bill. Let's see, Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, there is a Committee of the Whole amendment. This is the appropriate time to take that.
Yes, sir. Please proceed.
I ask it be read in.
Please read in the amendment.
Senate File 26, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, line 6.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I move adoption of this amendment. Mr. Chairman, this bill has been somewhat contentious, and I've had an uneasy feeling about it coming through. And my feeling was that for all that it was contentious, it was putting burdens on registered agents without solving the problem that we were dealing with. And the problem is that when one of these corporations, and they're domestic corporations, is taken over and used for illegal purposes, the registered agent proves not to know how to get a hold of them. And I didn't see anything in the bill that fixed that basic problem. So what this amendment does is tries to fix that problem. It was discussed in the standing committee, but I did not have specific enough language to offer it at that time. The requirement is that once every 13 months, the registered agent has to make successful contact with the company. And it's then set up so that it can be done if they have, say, a central office, because successful contact can be sending them a bill and getting a check back. If they have a central office that's doing this, as some of the larger ones do, doing it nationally, that's fine, as long as Wyoming can find out how it was that it was done. And when law enforcement can come calling and say, well, we contacted them, we sent them a bill at X address, and we got a check back, that works. You can, if you're a smaller operation, if you're a registered agent for a bunch of your friends and neighbors, you may once a year have your secretary call them and say, this is our record of your address, is it still valid? It's not a big burden. There is a little extra burden here in the first year after incorporation, because frequently what happens is they get incorporated, they haven't had to file their annual report. You get 60, 80, 70 days, however many, away from the incorporation, it gets sold, and then we don't have any knowledge of who's who. So there's an extra, when they're newly incorporated, there's an extra one time you gotta contact them. You can see it at least 60 and not more than 120 days after incorporation. That's a little bit of a burden. I got some mild pushback from a few of the, one actually, of the gentlemen representing the registered agents over that. I think that's important because that's where our problem is. But what this amendment will do is make the registered agent be capable of fulfilling what their actual function is, which is to be able to get a hold of them when there's a service of process or, frankly, when something's wrong and law enforcement comes calling. And there didn't seem to be much opposition to it. So I urge adoption of the amendment. I think it'll make this a much better bill.
Senator Bebout.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just a point of information for the sponsor. If you look at line 18, I think that that word contract should be contact, and it might have a, it really changes the meaning of what you're trying to accomplish towards the end of your amendment.
Mr. Chairman. Senator Scott.
He's exactly right. Can I approach the desk and make that change? It's
a good
simple
question.
Matter of removing an unnecessary R in the word.
Sure, Senator Scott, come up and make contract with the desk. Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, thank the good Senator from Fremont County for that. I'd missed that typo.
Thank you. I have discussion on the Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1. Ready for the question? All those in favor of Standing Committee Amendment number 1, please say aye.
Aye.
Oh, excuse me. Thank you. Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1, excuse me, Committee of the Whole Amendment number 1 has passed. We're now back on the bill. Senator Meyer.
One simple question. From what I understand from the increased, I guess, workload that the agents have to have where they didn't do anything before, I'm trying to determine the additional cost to each Wyoming domestic business. And from what I can understand, it's somewhere between $100 and $200 a year that every domestic business, corporate business in Wyoming is going to pay. Is that a fair representation? And if not, what is the number?
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, that would be true if you used a registered agent. Now, remember, you can have your own relationship with the Secretary of State's office. I do my own filings for my companies. I maintain the information. I am the contact person, so I don't have a registered agent. And also remember that we're talking about commercial registered agents for the most part in terms of the number of clients served. And that largely is greater than 10.
Go, Senator Cooper.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, as I recall, the domestic corporations, once you file, and all you have to do is if you change anything in your corporation, you just bring the Secretary of State's information up to date. But if you're a foreign corporation in the state, that's a lot different. They send you a form every year. You fill it out and say, I haven't changed anything or I did. That may cost you a little bit. If you're a domestic corporation, it's the cost of a postage stamp. That's it.
Senator Nicholas.
Mr. Chairman, I guess the question is, did the committee consider whether or not it would be appropriate to make an exception to the Act for those entities or corporations, if you will, or registered agents serving corporations where the entity either has a principal place of business in the state of Wyoming or owns real estate in the state of Wyoming? If that's not what we're trying to, if those are the entities that really we're not afraid of, why don't we exempt them and their registered agents from the Act?
Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, we did not consider that explicitly. We kind of looked at the number of 10 commercial entities, and we discussed the fact whether you had to have a registered agent. But I think that's probably a good solution. I'd welcome exploring that area, and I'm sure the folks from the Secretary of State office might be in contact with you to discuss that very amendment. You can bring it on second, third reading.
Senator Scott.
Chairman, I would urge caution, though, with regard to the principal office suggestion. Sometimes a principal office can be very pro forma.
Ready for the question? All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 26, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 26 is passed Committee of the Whole. Ms. Majority Floor Leader.
The Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again.
You've heard the motion. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Motion passes.
What have you got for me?
You better give me my script. I won't know the answer.
No. Something to read in? Which one?
No, I don't. I've got a couple of them contemplating.
Messages from the House. February the 23rd, 2008, from the House of Representatives. Messages, third reading passed. Mr. President, the following bills listed below pass the House on third reading by the vote indicated. House Bill 22, failure to observe road closures. I-54, noes 4, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 45, Film Incentive Program Authority. Ayes 56, noes 2, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 78, County Road Fund. Ayes 58, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 122, Game Wardens Enforcement of Littering Provisions. Ayes 55, noes 3, excused 1, absent 1. February the 21st, 2006, from the House of Representatives, messages, third reading, amendment, a passed, amended. Mr. President, the bills listed below pass the House on third reading in an amended form by the vote indicated. House Bill 13, Psychologist Licensure, ayes 58, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 46, Abuse of Animals, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 48, State Loan and Investment Board, ayes 57, noes 1, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 67, Intertribal Education and Community Center, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 76, Criminal Street Gangs, ayes 47, noes 11, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 85, Brucellosis Testing Program, ayes 58, excused 1, absent 1. House Bill 43, Penalties for Domestic Violence, ayes 59, excused 1. House Bill 97, Juvenile Hearings, Continuances, ayes 47, noes 12, excused 1. And House Bill 109, Telecommunications Switched Access. Ayes 48, noes 11, excused 1. Patricia Benskin, House Chief Clerk. Messages from the House. Oh, Standing Committee reports. I'm sorry, we already did the House. February the 21st, 2006, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 94, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Nicholas, Peterson, Townsend. No, Senator Meyer, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 19, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Job, Myers, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend. Senator Nicholas, Chairman.
February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highway, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 21, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Geis, Hastert, Johnson, Landon, and Von Flatren, Senator Von Flatren, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, and Military Affairs, to whom was referred House Bill 59, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Geis, Hastert, Johnson, Landon, Von Flatren, Senator Von Flatren, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 5, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Ullman, Burns, Cole, Massey, and Mockler, Senator Burns, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporation Elections and Political Subdivisions, to whom was referred House Bill 7, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 71, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass. Aye, Senators Job, Meyer, Nicholas, Peterson, and Townsend, Senator Nicholas, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 7, Corporations, Election, Political Subdivision, to whom was referred House Bill 16, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Case, Cooper, DeCarrier, Larson, and Scott, Senator Case, Chairman. February the 21st, 2008, Mr. President, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 6, reports back with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Aye, Senators Ullman, Burns, Cole, Massey, and Mockler, Senator Burns, Chairman.
Senator Burns.
Mr. President, House Bill 6, which is State Veterans Museum, sponsored by Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources Committee, has an appropriation, and I ask that you re-refer it to Committee Number 2, Appropriations.
Hearing no objection, we'll have House Bill 6 march off to Appropriations. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears this desk.
Mr. President, I move that the Senate be in recess until 1:30.
Are there any announcements? The motion is that the Senate be in recess until 1:30. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. The Senate is in recess until 1:30.